Headlines: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman strongly condemns an attack on Azerbaijan's embassy in Tehran and says the incident is being investigated. Hamas hails rocket attacks by resistance groups on Israeli positions, saying Palestinians have the right to fight the regime's aggression. And Moscow calls new U.S. sanctions against Russia over Ukraine war absurd, saying foreign companies are the first to suffer. Just world news. The Iranian capital, Tehran. Welcome. Our top story this hour: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has strongly condemned an attack on Azerbaijan's embassy in Tehran that left a person dead and two more injured. Nasser Kanani extended his condolences to the people and government of Azerbaijan. He said the attacker is now in custody and is being investigated. Kanani advised media to avoid speculation. According to Tehran's police chief, the attacker was armed with a Kalashnikov assault rifle. Hossein Rahimi says the gunman entered the embassy alongside an Azeri diplomat and began shooting. The diplomat was killed as a result. Hosseini says initial investigations show that personal motives were behind the attack. Azerbaijan's foreign ministry says the deceased person was the head of the security service. The attacker claims that his wife entered the embassy months ago and never returned. Following the attack, Azerbaijan says it will evacuate its Tehran embassy. Elsewhere, Iranians across the country have held rallies against the recent acts of desecration of the Holy Quran in Europe. People took to the streets in the capital, Tehran, and other cities following the Friday prayers. They said the heinous incident is an act of incitement and a serious provocation to the feelings of more than 2 billion Muslims worldwide. The protesters called on European authorities to put an end to hostilities against Islam. On Monday, a Dutch politician tore apart a copy of the Holy Quran in the city of The Hague. It followed an incident in Sweden where a politician burned a copy of the Quran outside the Turkish embassy. Many Muslim states, including Iran, Pakistan, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates, have slammed the move. Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi is an activist and political analyst and joins us out of Qom. So what's your take on this? We've seen many people denounce the, many officials and people as well on the streets denounce this blasphemous act, which is appears to be by some European governments authorizing the some individuals and politicians to target the religion of Islam.
Yeah, indeed. I believe it's much beyond so-called freedom of speech slogans in Western countries, European countries. It is what I can observe very clearly, and anyone who's following the events and recent attacks and insults against Quran, Islamic sanctities, Holy Prophet of Islam, religious figures in different European countries, can evidently find the political agendas behind these events. It's very clear what took place in Sweden, for example, Stockholm, Sweden. It was in front of the Turkish embassy, sending a very clear message to the Turkish government, Turkish nation. Weeks before that, we observed the, Charlie Hebdo in France that announced a cartoon contest, trying to mock the Iranian supreme leader, who is a religious leader also for tens of millions of the Shia Muslims across the globe. And the recent events, again, burning Quran, These are all, I believe, not about so-called freedom of speech from one side and believing in sanctities, Islamic and religious sanctities on the other side. That's not the case. This is what typically we are facing, that from one side, European values, Western values, who believe in freedom of speech, and on the other side, Muslims who don't want their sanctities being touched or discussed or criticized. That is not a case. I believe a political agenda is behind that. There is nothing as, pure freedom of speech, liberal life. No, that's not at all. all countries in European countries, Western countries, they have their red lines, they have their framework. Interestingly, just I think a couple of days ago or yesterday, an Egyptian young man announced that he's gonna burn Torah, the religious book of the Jews. He announced like that in front of the Israeli embassy, but he was stopped. And then he announced that I was not going to do that. I was just going to show the double standards. I was just going to show how all things are politicized in Western countries. I do believe that a political game is behind all of them. And for Western countries, there is nothing as values. They don't believe in values. Of course, there are people in Western countries who believe in so-called freedom of speech. But this is not the case about the structure, the political system over there. They are misusing and they are using all these agendas, all these events, all these people, all these so-called far-right people for their own political agenda. I mentioned what took place in France. That was amid the recent events and riots that took place inside Iran. And they were going to make use of those events for their own political agendas against the Iranian government. And the same thing also took place against the Turkish government. It is one important thing I believe we have to pay attention to, that that is the role that Islam and Islamic belief is playing in the Muslim nations like Iran, Pakistan, Turkey, Malaysia, those Muslim nations. I'm typically speaking, Islam is playing a very important role in forming the nation in their sovereign nation, in their independence. And that's being targeted by Western countries. And I believe, again, here are political agendas behind. And we should not be deceived by so-called this issue of, like, we believe in freedom of speech and you don't believe in freedom of speech. No, that's not the case at all. And it has been proved again and again that they are not there is nothing as, pure freedom of speech in any part of the world. Any Western country, any European country has its own red lines that's not allowing anyone to cross that. And that took place about Israel, about Holocaust, about Russian war, Russian-Ukraine war. Different examples are there that they don't believe in freedom of speech, actually, and this is being misused for their own political agendas.
I recall a speech by the Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who said that the West continues to refer during the era of Daesh to Daesh, or as they refer to it, as some politicians refer to them as ISIL, but they constantly, the politicians and the media, refer to them as Islamic State in an attempt to try and make a comparison with the Islamic Republic of Iran. One was a very extremist that used the Islam as, or pretended to be Muslims while they were very extremist, whilst one was a peaceful attributes of this peaceful, loving religion, and they try to link the two together. What's your thoughts on that?
That's true. As I mentioned, it's all a part of the political agenda of the Western countries. And interestingly, for West, there is nothing as values. They don't believe in any values from my perspective. Any so-called value of West is being manipulated, is being misused for their political agendas. And that's not the case in Eastern countries. When there's a Muslim nation or a Muslim Islamic state, like Islamic Republic of Iran, there are some red lines. Those red lines are the ideological red lines, for example. Let's be frank on that. But they are not being misused. They are not being misused for their profits. That's not the case. But Western countries have proven that. Look at what took place about Ukraine and Russia. Even they were not there to support their so-called Ukrainians when they were feeling that it's going to be against their interests. Germany was not there to give its tanks to Ukraine unless it got a green signal from the Americans. They're already clear. What they think, it's all about their political agendas. They don't believe in any value. Even their so-called Western values are not real from our perspective. And anything could be misused for their agendas.
Okay, Sarbaz, thank you very much indeed for that. Sarbaz Ruhullah Rezvi is an activist and political analyst joining us from the holy Iranian city of Qom. Now, moving on, Israeli forces have conducted a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the northern occupied West Bank, killing 10 Palestinians and injuring many more. The raid took place on Thursday, making it the deadliest day since the beginning of the year. The latest fatalities bring to 30 the number of Palestinians killed in the occupied West Bank this year alone.
Thousands of people have taken part in the funeral procession of Palestinians killed in the Israeli forces raid on the West Bank city of Jenin Thursday. Carrying the martyrs' bodies, the mourners chanted slogans condemning the Israeli crimes. It was early Thursday when Palestinian media reported the regime forces raid on the Jenin refugee camp. The savage attack left the residents and popular resistance groups based in the camp with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the regime forces.
What happened today in Jenin Governorate is a massacre in the very sense of the word. We received 8 martyrs and 1 martyr in Ibn Sina Hospital. In addition to 18 wounded, 3 of them are in a very serious condition. Most of the injuries were due to direct targeting with the aim of killing.
Later in the day, the Israeli troops fatally shot another Palestinian in the town of Al-Ram, near the occupied city of Al-Quds. The Palestinian was killed during a protest against the Israeli forces' raid on Jenin. With a total death toll of 10, January 26th turned into one of the deadliest days in the occupied West Bank since Israel's military raids intensified at the start of last year. Iran's foreign ministry reacted to the bloody incident. It called on Muslim countries to unite and coordinate their actions in support of the oppressed Palestinian nation and the resistance to stop the apartheid regime's acts of terror. Palestinian resistance groups have also condemned the Israeli atrocity in the strongest words, calling for continued resistance against the regime.
The massacre that the Israeli occupation army committed in Jenin confirms the racist, fascist, and criminal nature of the right-wing occupation government. This aggression, in addition to the continued violations at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and of the rights of the Palestinians in Israel, shows that this government insists on escalating the situation.
Our resistance will carry on and shall not back off from confronting this Zionist occupier, and the killing will not intimidate us and will not be intimidated by these threats made by the criminal leaders of this Zionist entity.
Palestinian resistance movements say the latest Israeli raid on Jenin comes within the context of recent escalations, especially in light of the new far-right cabinet headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his extremist allies. Hamas and Islamic Jihad have both expressed readiness to fight back in case these raids continue. Analysts believe that Palestinians need to bolster resistance against Israel to neutralize the regime's vicious plots.
The resistance should continue and should be escalated against the Israeli, and they should know that they should pay the price for all crimes they are committing.
Actually, they mean to eliminate the resistance in the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, to pave the way to construct more Israeli settlements in the West Bank, in which we all know that these settlements are internationally illegal.
Jenin is among those areas in the northern West Bank where Israel intensified its raids over the past year in an attempt to crack down on the Palestinian resistance. In addition to Palestinian resistance fighters, civilians confronting the Israeli army during such raids and even bystanders have been killed mercilessly. More than 170 Palestinians, including at least 30 children, were killed across the occupied West Bank last year. Moreover, at least 29 Palestinians, including 5 children, have been killed in January 2023 alone.
Meanwhile, Israeli aircraft have carried out multiple airstrikes in the besieged Gaza Strip. According to Palestinian media, the Israeli strikes hit positions of resistance groups in different locations in the Gaza Strip. The strikes came hours after Palestinians fired rockets on Israeli positions. They did so in response to the regime's bloody raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. A spokesman for the resistance movement Hamas has hailed the Palestinian response. Hazem Qasim said the Palestinian people and their resistance groups have the right to fight Israeli aggression. He said resistance groups in Gaza will continue to defend Palestinians and their sanctities. The UK and Canada say they will send heavy tanks to Ukraine following similar decisions by the United States and Germany. The British government says it will send 14 Challenger 2 tanks by the end of March. It added that training of Ukrainian soldiers in how to use and maintain those tanks will start next week. Canada, for its part, said it will supply heavy tanks to Ukraine, starting with a shipment of 4 fully operational German Leopards. The new development came after Germany promised to provide Ukraine with its Leopard tanks by the end of March. Following Berlin's announcement, the U.S. said it would send 31 Abrams tanks to bolster Ukraine in its war with Russia. And Moscow has dismissed the new U.S. sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine, calling them absurd. The Russian embassy in the United States says foreign companies are the first to suffer from the measures. That's because, the embassy says, the ability of those companies to do business with Russia is constantly shrinking. The new sanctions announced on Thursday target dozens of people and entities. They include Russian private company Wagner Group, which is fighting in Ukraine. In the latest development of the conflict there, the Ukrainian military has said the danger of Russian air attacks remains high on Friday. A day earlier, Russian airstrikes killed 11 people in different locations. Kiev said its forces had repelled some of the Thursday strikes. That wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
In this day and age, the concept of war and its patterns are constantly evolving. Currently, with the emergence of virtual environments, social media, and complex networked societies, new patterns of modern warfare are emerging. However, the Islamic Republic of Iran has always been the target of all kinds of Western attacks. Accordingly, in the last few months, hybrid warfare as one of the modern models of war was unsuccessfully utilized against the Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation. In response, on several occasions, people have turned out en masse in rallies across Iran in order to call out the resounding defeat of U.S.-Israeli seditious plots during recent riots in the country. These demonstrations in Iran are indicative of the nation's unified resistance and indefatigable fight against global arrogance, which is also consistent with what's taking place globally, as many nations are throwing off the shackles of U.S. hegemony and the geography of arrogance in the world is waning day by day. Nevertheless, the message falls on deaf ears in Washington, Tel Aviv, and certain European countries. America's never-ending plots against Iran appear to be nowhere near its conclusion. As the world welcomed the arrival of 2023 with firework displays and celebration ceremonies, there was special news about a new plot in the never-ending schemes of the United States against the Iranian nation. A series of social media posts on New Year's Eve announced the formation of an unofficial Iran opposition coalition that consisted of key public figures and so-called civil society activists outside of Iran with the intent to overthrow the revolutionary government in Iran. To take a closer look at this scenario, please stay with us on this edition of Iran Today. The social media post revealing the formation of the new opposition group on the New Year's Eve was shared by an unofficial Iran opposition coalition that consisted of former Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi, journalist Masih Ali-Nejad, lawyer Shirin Ebadi, actress Nazanin Bonyadi, actress Gulshifte Farahani, former football player Ali Karimi, lawyer Hamid Ismailiyun, and was later followed by the Secretary General of the Separatist Kurdistan Komele Party, Abdullah Muhtadi, and some other individuals.
One of the problems that the enemies of Iran face outside the country, and they have not been able to solve, is finding a leader for riots in Iran. And so far, they have resorted to many people. From inside, they pushed, for example, Ali Dai, the famous Iranian soccer player, but he refused to take action and said that I'm not a politician. Then they turned to Ali Karimi, another Iranian soccer player, but it seems that he couldn't do much. There was a person who had lost his family in the Ukrainian plane crash. They even made a documentary with that person and spread lies against the Iranian government, but to no avail. And then they realized that this leader would be better if she is a woman.
The mainstream media has described the formation of this coalition as an important step forward to grant the million-strong Iranian diaspora a unified and thus more effective voice to increase pressure on the Islamic Republic to further isolate it. In other words, as a way to support the hybrid warfare against Iran.
The capitalist system no longer deals with Iran with cannons and tanks because it has the experience of Iraq-Iran eight-year war. They know well that war cannot break the Iranian nation, and on the other hand, Iran has a powerful military force and equipment. As a result, they must penetrate through the media. They buy a pen and paper with the money they wanted to spend on war, weapons, and produce fake news.
Yet the coalition's impact on domestic dynamics, especially on issues relevant to the recent unrest, is unclear. In particular, the challenge regarding a heavier involvement of the working class, whose participation in different sectors of the society is significant. If their support is attained, it could help break the country's economic lifelines. But the mentioned coalition so far does not include voices that are seen as representing the interests of Iran's working classes, although this does not mean that the coalition members have not used sympathetic slogans towards them in the past.
Look at the main slogans of these protesters: women, life, freedom. Two of these slogans are not even political. Well, women as a slogan is related to the center of the family, and life pertains to economy. Economics is not political at all. If these first two slogans are dealt with, no one will have a problem with the authorities of the Iranian government. But what we see here and there is, unfortunately, the riots is so outrageous. For example, insulting religions is a prohibition and is not even an accepted principle in France.
For example, in Britain or France, when there is a demonstration, as soon as it turns violent, how the police treat them. Even the President of France or the Prime Minister of Britain believe and announce that they need to give more power to the police department because the safety of the streets of Paris and London is a priority. After all this, the next priority is to deal with the demands of the protesters. In our country and in the recent events, the people's demands were not raised at all. It was violence and action against national security and the government.
According to American government officials, such an integration is especially crucial, since some labor activists have stated that, hypothetically speaking, their interests might not be necessarily guaranteed by an exiled opposition group that may tend to neglect issues of class based on their own social status and, in the worst case, abandon them in any post-Islamic Republic system. In light of such potential shortcomings about the initial composition of the group, outright condemnation of it as a neoliberal or even right-wing political project from independent figures in the political arena is likely to be emerging fast. Moreover, according to sociopolitical experts, a program that is attempting to guarantee not only political but also future economic fortunes of the country and determine strategies for Iran's supposed regime change ideally needs to be coordinated and drafted by social forces inside Iran. because legitimacy primarily emanates from the people inside Iran and not from the diaspora, albeit the latter is not seen as insignificant. Otherwise, this attempt, like the ones before it, will not take a significant step forward.
Establishing the Iran International is another step. This high-cost media outlet started operating in 2017 after many meetings between Israeli and British politicians, and finally, they came to the conclusion that one of the ways to defeat the Islamic Republic of Iran is to establish a network alongside other networks with different purposes and methods. They believed that BBC Persian was not enough, and to fulfill their hybrid warfare against Iran, the establishment of this terrorist news channel was a need.
Going by the model of the recent hybrid warfare designed by the Western intelligence organizations, the targeted forces inside Iran would ideally include representatives from the three major components of Iranian civil society, namely the women, labor, and student movements, but also the youth and ethnic groups, as well as professional associations such as those of teachers, bus drivers, truck drivers, lawyers, doctors, and so forth.
Basically, in the profession of journalism and reporting, the media must be independent. Iran International is not independent. It is affiliated to Saudi Arabia and follows the politics of its kingdom. Its actions are miles away from the profession of journalism. They officially spread lies against Iran, and I believe that this will make it gradually lose its audience.
On New Year's Day, a day after the coalition had announced its existence, Saudi-financed London-based media outlet Iran International, also known as Saudi International within the media circles, invited some of its members, namely Mohtadi, Ali Nejad, Ismail Youn, and Ebadi, to comment and offer reflections about the coalition and its purpose. First, they acknowledged their failure in omitting the protest's main slogan, Woman, Life, Freedom, in their initial announcement on New Year's Eve. In addition, among other things, they reflected on the need to be open and responsive to harsh criticism that is voiced against the coalition and its work, so that historical mistakes aren't repeated when Iranian political entities may not have offered such open spaces for constructive criticism. Moreover, they stated that the coalition has no desire to assume power in Iran, but wants to work toward abolishing the Islamic Republic by peaceful means and creating a democratic future for the multifaceted mosaic of the Iranian nation. Listening to these statements brings back memories of recent remarks by the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, who said the perspective of the systematic effort of the subversive groups is not only to protest, but to use coercive force against the Iranian government to convey the message that it is no longer unarmed.
Where are these media outlets based? Well, most of them are stationed in London, a city which is known for its Ofcom rules and regulations. This regulatory entity has strict rules in the field of media broadcasting and severely punishes any media that promotes violence and encourages terrorism. Punishments have been considered for all of these. But we need to ask this question loud so that everyone hears it. Why this Saudi-funded terrorist media, that is the International, is never punished, or even BBC Persian? They clearly invite guests who teach how to make Molotov cocktails and how to attack security forces of Iran.
In an interview with London-based BBC Persian TV channel, Bolton, who is notorious for his hawkish stances, said the so-called Iranian opposition is arming protesters with weapons smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan, adding that he had seen images of these forces trained and armed in Iraq's Kurdistan region and expressed hope that the ongoing unrest in Iran would lead to regime change.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Here's how it looks on the page. Reuters reads, Saudi woman gets 45-year prison term for social media post, rights group says. A Saudi Arabian court has sentenced a woman to 45 years in prison for social media posts, a rights group said, in the latest example of a crackdown on women activists that followed a visit by U.S. President Joe Biden to the kingdom. Noura bint Said al-Qahtani was convicted likely within last week by the Saudi Specialized Criminal Court on charges of using the internet to tear the Saudi social fabric and violating public order by using social media, Washington-based Dawn organization said in a statement citing court documents. Dawn said little was known about Qahtani or what her social media posts said and that it was continuing to investigate her case. Qahtani's conviction came a few weeks after Salma al-Shahab, a mother of two and doctoral candidate at the University of Leeds in Britain, was sentenced to 35 years in jail for following and retweeting dissidents and activists on Twitter. The Biden administration said last week it had raised significant concerns with Saudi Arabia over Shahab's sentencing, which included a 34-year travel ban for her tweets. Tensions over oil-rich Saudi Arabia's human rights record have strained its ties with the United States, including over women's rights and the 2018 murder and dismemberment of journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Tehran Times reads, Saudi money for anti-Iran terror channel and demonstrations in the Netherlands. The controversial anti-Iran satellite channel Ahwazuna TV in Rizwick has been financed with money from the Saudi intelligence service. The Saudis were also billed for demonstrations by the separatist movement ASMLA. The financing of the TV channel and at least one demonstration in The Hague is apparent from research by Dutch investigative program Argos, the Danish public broadcaster DR, and the Norwegian NRK. The Denmark-based leadership of the Arab-Iranian movement ASMLA requested and received large sums through the Saudi intelligence service for its organization in Europe and its armed branch in Iran. The Arab Struggle Movement for the Liberation of Ahvaz resorts to violence in the Iranian region of Khuzestan for independence. ASMLA also organized demonstrations in Europe against Iran and for the separation of Ahvaz. For this, the ASMLA leadership also requested funding from Saudi Arabia and a budget was drawn up. Money was needed for plane tickets, hotels, buses, and allowances for journalists. Refugees from asylum seekers' centers also had to be paid to participate. That would have cost 60 euros per person. Arab news channels were promised to report. Police documents mention an amount of 400,000 euros, including 190,000 euros for demonstrations in The Hague and 80,000 for a demonstration in Copenhagen. The communication dates from late 2014 and early 2015. In 2015, there were manifestations of ASMLA in Copenhagen and Brussels, among others, and in 2016 at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. America's superficial use of women's status in its recent hybrid warfare against Tehran hasn't been limited to just slogans such as woman, life, freedom. The Biden administration has also been busy popping up new model activist characters almost daily. One of these made-for-Iranian teenage girls to follow characters is Ms. Nazanin Bonyadi.
Iran's opposition groups and enemies have no choice but to find a leader that is popular among the Iranian nation. Since there is no one, however, they sometimes go to Reza Pahlavi, the corrupt son of the Shah of Iran. Sometimes they resort to the MKO terrorist groups or other terrorists, such as al-Ahwazi leaders, who have carried out thousands of assassinations in Iran, and their names have been on the list of terrorists for years. When there is no one around, they try to make one. For example, this time they found a young, attractive woman, made her famous by setting up visits with American high-ranking officials, a woman named Nazanin Bonyadi. But the point is that this lady was born in Tehran and left Iran while she was a 20-day baby.
Someone who has not been to Iran and has not lived in Iran,
how much information and experience can he or she have? If you want to be a riot's leader, be it, but you need to have experience about the living conditions in Iran and the ups and downs of life in it. Nazanin Bonyadin gets all the information from people around her. She has no field experience and can never make a correct decision and judgment about the situation of women in Iran and the conditions of life and the government. This is one of the big and serious criticisms that are directed at her.
As part of a theatrical showmanship, the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan have met with Nazanin Bonyadi, among others, in the past to promote women's uprising in Iran. Naz, as she is called in the U.S., was born a couple of years after the victory of the Iranian Revolution. Less than a month after her birth, she and her parents left Iran, and before becoming an actress in 2006, she appeared as a music video dancer. At one point in her acting career, she co-starred as CIA analyst Farah Shirazi on seasons 3 and 4 of the drama series Homeland.
The people of Iran got to know her for the first time when she supported the U.S. sanctions against Iran. It was a very unpleasant interview. She mentioned the patients who have chemotherapy but die because they can't have access to their medicine due to U.S. sanctions. It was appalling. Her comments were widely circulated among Iranian social media users, and everyone lambasted her views and her disregard for the ordinary people of Iran, who are the main target in this war of sanctions.
In the تحریم‌های اقتصادی مثل شیمی درمانی میمونه به خاطر اینکه به همون قدری که هدفش اینه که به سرطان رو نابود کنه صدمه میرسونه به بقیه 100% صدمه میرسونه به بقیه بدن ما این جریان خیلی پیچیده تره از اینی که بگیم تحریم خوبه یا بده.
In the mid-2000s, she became a dedicated Scientologist, which is a contemporary religion or cult, born in the U.S. during the 1950s and led anonymously by CIA. In late 2004 to early 2005, she had a brief relationship with actor Tom Cruise, which is what she's most famous for. According to claims in a documentary, her acquaintance with Cruise was not accidental, and the Church of Scientology prepared and contractually planted her for this role as Cruise's hired girlfriend. She had to sign a confidentiality agreement stating she could not abandon this special project without the church's approval. After their relationship ended in January 2005, Bonyadi confessed her devastation to a friend and fellow church member. She was punished for this according to church policies. She had to dig ditches at midnight and scrub bathroom floor tiles, etc. She also testified that she felt as if she was a victim of white slavery because she traveled across state lines under false pretenses. The hacked emails of this so-called political activist showed that she had a significant relationship with the American intelligence agency CIA. In these emails, Nazanin Bonyadi exchanged ideas with the CIA about her actions to fight against Iran. Ray Takei, who is known for his antagonism against Iran in the U.S. security apparatus, exchanges emails with Nazanin and even invites her to the University of Chicago on behalf of the CIA. In another email, Nazanin asks Mazyar Behari, the editor of the anti-Iranian new website Iran Wire, a question in response to which Mazyar Behari mentions that Bin Salman directly provides financial support to the Iran International Terrorist Television.
Nazanin Bonyadi is an Iranian born.
To make a long story short, she is now an American, British, Iranian citizen who has dedicated her life under false pretenses to overthrow the Iranian government and, in the present, lead Iranian women to freedom. Speaking of false pretenses, media reports are indicating that Mohammed bin Salman is pretending that he is interested in the freedom of Iranian women, and therefore the Saudi establishment has committed itself to cover the finances for this so-called Iranian opposition coalition. In reality, isn't it hard to think of women's freedom while the Saudi regime prosecutes women as terrorists for so much as dabbling in politics or executes people for a simple tweet?
که به نظر میرسه که به ویژه بعد از انقلاب
It seems that especially after the Islamic Revolution, a fierce competition has developed between Iran and Saudi Arabia in establishing the balance of power in the region. This is actually what benefits the West the most. That is, they always try to create a balance of power between these two countries, and they welcome this competition, and they like to see hostility between them, especially from Saudi Arabia, and especially through media platforms in a soft way. This has a historical record.
In Saudi Arabia, women face systematic discrimination and are left exposed to domestic violence and have few places to turn when they face abuse, leading some women to undertake dangerous escape attempts to flee the country.
Saudi Arabia does not have a good record in the field of human rights, both women's rights and people's rights. Really, in this country, everyone's rights are violated, and as you mentioned, women's rights are more. Women are treated like in the Middle Ages. They were not allowed to drive until recently. There is polygamy in Saudi Arabia. Assaulting women and attacking women and beating them is common among Arabs of that country. They cast degrading looks on women.
It's absurd that the crown prince of such a country is funding the opposition group in Iran, whose motto is Woman, Life, Freedom.
Since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Saudi Arabia has not had a good approach towards Iran, and that is because of the existence of Wahhabi thinking in this country, and also because it sees Iran as an obstacle for leading the world of Islam. And they felt that the Islamic Republic of Iran may overshadow them in the Islamic world with the Islamic Revolution.
Here, you might want to know about some of the code of ethics which journalists worldwide are required to comply. However, when it comes to Iran, they forget their professional principles. Seek truth and report it. This includes fact-checking, not intentionally distorting information, identifying sources, avoiding stereotypes, and supporting the open exchange of opinions. Minimize harm. This includes demonstrating compassion for sources and subjects of stories and protecting the privacy of individuals. Act independently. This includes avoiding conflicts of interest and corruption and resisting the attempts of advertisers and special interest groups to influence the news. Be accountable. This includes correcting mistakes, inviting criticism, and exposing unethical practices of the media.
If you post General Soleimani's photos on your page, you will immediately receive a warning from your platform. Facebook has warned me 4 times for this reason and finally shut down my accounts. On the other hand, the Iran International, or rather say, the terrorist Saudi International Channel, or Iran Wire, or Independent, or others, easily teach violence or techniques of riots and revolutions through their platform, but no one stops them. Iran International has violated journalism codes of ethics many times. They have even invited a gay group and gave them a stage to show their support for the riots in Iran. It is hilarious that these gay people even announce that homosexuality should exist in the future of Iran.
Speaking of psychological campaign and misrepresentation of facts, after the Iranian judiciary announced that Akbari, a former Iranian deputy defense minister, was sentenced to death and executed on charges of corruption on earth, threatening social and political well-being, and extensive actions against the country's internal and external security through espionage for the British government's intelligence agency, UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak criticized Tehran for its alleged violations of human rights without acknowledging the fact that Akbari had in fact provided covert services for MI6. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path.
to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of Al-Sahif al-Sajjadiyya for Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Zain al-Ahmadin alayhi salamullah. We were looking at this dua, and we got to the part where the Imam says, O Allah, I seek refuge in you from preferring falsehood over truth. وَإِثَارِ الْحَقْ بَاطِلِ عَلَى الْحَقِّ وَإِثَارِ الْبَاطِلِ عَلَى الْحَقِّ. And that is a problem that we face on our daily life. When it comes to choosing truth over falsehood, sometimes we feel alone and alienated in that path, because the majority of people are bad. Allah says, أَكْثَرُهُمْ فَاسِقُونَ. Most of them, they are transgressors. أَكْثَرُهُمْ ظَالِمُونَ. أَكْثَرُهُمْ this and أَكْثَرُهُمْ that. The most of them. قَلِيلٌ مِّنْ عَبَادِيَ الشَّكُورُ. On the other hand, only few, handful of my believers are thankful. And قَلِيلٌ مِّنْ عَبَادِيَ this and قَلِيلٌ مِّنْ عَبَادِيَ that. Few of them is this and few of them is that. So you can see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala constantly, He says the majority are bad, the minority are good. Being a minority, living amongst a majority, you are singled out. And people single you out from the crowd. And sometimes to stand up against that which is false, and to say this is haram and this is wrong, it will make you feel embarrassed, it will make you feel bad. That is the problem that we are facing currently. Let us take a short break and then we will continue right after.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we were saying that being on the path of truth, sometimes you are singled out and you feel alone. Sometimes we live in societies and Western societies where the majority of the people around us are non-Muslims. And sometimes, for example, I had to shake hands with a non-mahram woman. Sometimes I have to reject alcohol or even to reject getting in the place of alcohol. Sometimes at my workplace, things are inappropriate, things are happening. And as a Muslim, I have to say no to these things. And me saying no to these things, it means that I will be looked at differently. I would be even sometimes now in some countries, if you say no to LGBT or you say no to gender, whatever they want to call it these days, in some countries now, it's a law. If you say anything against it, you'll be prosecuted. So you feel left alone and you feel that you are walking on your own. A hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, even back in the day, he knew this is going to happen. And even though he himself lived it, the Imam alayhi salamullah, he says, لا تستوحشوا في طريق الهدى لقلة أهله. When it comes to the path of guidance, don't feel alone because or due to how many people are taking it. Because there are few people taking it, don't feel alone. فَإِنَّ النَّاسَ. So he's trying to explain why is this happening. And he's trying to comfort the believers who find themselves against this strong current. He says, فَإِنَّ النَّاسَ اجتمعوا على مائدة شبعها قصير. For people have gathered on a meal that being satisfied from it is very short while. No matter how much she eat right now, after an hour, 2 hours will be gone. You'll become hungry again. He said, this dunya, it's like a meal. No matter how much people want to eat from it, sooner or later will be over. They will die and they won't get anything. They will not take anything. So he says, look at them in this way, as them being losers and you being victorious. So even though you're few, but you are on the right track, you are the successful one. You are the one who's going to go to heaven. And then he says, وَجَوْعُهَا طَوِيلٌ. Hunger of this world is so long once we go to the afterlife. I fill up my stomach here with everything haram and prefer falsehood over right. And then when I go to the afterlife, I'm going to be starved. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to say to me, okay, well, we can't help you there. You destroyed yourself. Let us take a short break and then we come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So Imam Ali alayhi salam was in a hadith trying to comfort the mu'mineen. And he says to them, don't worry if you find yourself alone or you find yourself few in the path of haq. Because people that you see, the majority of people, they came to a meal that, you know, satisfaction from it is very few. And yet hunger that will cause them on the day of judgment day will be too long and too severe. Then he says, أيها الناس, O people, من سلك الطريق الواضح ورد الماء. He who takes a clear path, and a path of, you know, not going right or left, just a straight path of Allah, he will get to the water. It's like, imagine you're trying to drink water, you're thirsty, and you're trying to take a path to the river. You will take the clearest path, the most straight path, the one that will get you there easily and without any harm. وَمَنْ خَالَفَ وَقَعَ فِي التِّيهِ. And whoever would choose something else, he will be lost. The path of Allah is the Prophet, is the Quran, is the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam. You take that path, you'll go to heaven. You go against the path of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam. You go against the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalam. And then you'll be lost. As simple as that. As believers, as mu'mineen, if we acclaim to be mu'mineen, we have to prefer haq over batil, not vice versa. And that's why Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, among the things that he needs from Allah, among the guarantees he wants from Allah, among the assistance he wants from Allah, he says, oh Allah, I'm facing a lot of dangers in this world. And without your help, I'll be lost. And among the things that I need the most is to be able to choose righthood over falsehood, to be able to prefer truth over falsehood. Because if I do vice versa, I will lose my dunya and I will lose my akhirah. So it is very important for us to also keep that in mind. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را، هرگز مخواد از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.